The last topic that we're going to look at in the context of 4G networks is the competing certified 4G standard of Wireless MAN Advanced, which is the 802.16m standard, and which is the evolution of the WiMAX or 802.16e standard. So the WiMAX standard came from a very much different world than the mobile telephony standards. The mobile telephony networks arose pretty much out of sort of a telephony-based approach. WiMAX was developed to, as I say, be a standards-based technology enabling the delivery of last-mile wireless broadband access as an alternative to cable or DSL. So it was a wireless access point-to-point connection technology whose whole goal primarily was to provide high bit rates, and since it came from a packet technology, data technology standpoint, was also fairly early to look at the quality of service issues for sort of handling the arising sorts of multimedia data. Okay. So it wasn't, it didn't start with voice and then try and add everything on. It started with data and, you know, then sort of recognized the evolving nature of the data and the different requirements of the data. And so as the mobile world developed and started being more and more concerned with high data rates, people started looking at WiMAX as a technology that was capable of providing these high data rates. So WiMAX, again, adopted the OFDM MIMO technology a lot earlier, or earlier, I shouldn't say a lot earlier, but earlier than the mobile community did, the cellular community did. Okay, so in that context, it started competing in that world, and what was called Mobile WiMAX, which is the 802.16e standard, was certified as a 3G standard. And now Wireless MAN Advanced, the 802.16m standard, has been certified as an IMTS Advanced 4G standard. So, again, from an evolutionary point of view, its goal was to provide high data rates over a wireless point-to-point link. And so the early systems offered a few hundred kilobits per second and were not terribly popular. But again, as the technology evolved, higher data rates became available. And in your second generation systems, you had non-line of sight broadband, which again used these sort of fairly sophisticated technologies such as OFDM and MIMO, and introduced a cellular structure, so allowing sort of broader connectivity. So the focus of our lecture again is going to be WiMAX as in the 3G and 4G context, but it still also has its initial sort of just access point technology function as well, and in that space there are other IEEE standards that are also being looked at. So the 802.20 standard is also looking at sort of broadband at speed, and the 802.22 standard looks at sort of using different radio spectrum, in particular using cognitive radio techniques to use some of the TV, broadcast television spectrum. And so the idea behind cognitive radio, if you're curious, is just that the system can detect when a spectrum is in use and then will not compete for that spectrum. But if it's not in use, then it will make use of that spectrum. So it's trying to make efficient use of spectrum that has been allocated to different purposes. But again, our focus today is going to be on this, primarily just on the technology, and then, again, how it fits into the 3G and 4G world. Okay, so in terms of standardization, this is part of the IEEE 802 family, so that's a family that deals with point-to-point links, point-to-point connectivity primarily. So 802.11, which we'll look at later, is the wireless LAN standard. The other 802s cover various wired LAN standards, so local area network and metropolitan area network point-to-point standards are covered within IEEE 802. Again, 802.16 started as an air interface for wireless broadband, and like all of these wireless standards, has evolved with time as as people find out more about the technology and improve the technology, the standards evolve to encompass that. So as we see, OFDM and OFDMA appear fairly early in this evolution in the 802.16a amendment to the initial standard. And this evolves further as time goes on. As of 2004, it was still not sort of supporting mobility. The first WiMAX standard to support mobility was 802.16e, 2005. It was approved in 2005. And that's just shortened to 802.16e. And we're going to spend some time looking at the features of this specific flavor of the standard. Again, it was the first to support mobility, so to become a contender in the cellular world. And so it allowed for handovers. Radio technology was evolving the whole time and trying to improve the spectrum efficiency. Started to use MIMO schemes. and hybrid ARQ, so sophisticated coding for dealing with errors. And added security issues, security enhancements. Improved the quality of service offerings, and also included sort of a proposed mobile network, core network layer, in addition to the point-to-point standard. Although that's not part of the standard itself, it sits on top of this standard. And these this standard is encapsulated in System Profile Release 1. And this is a time, the duplexing allowed is time division duplexing. So again, this standard was certified as being IMTS 2000 or 3G compliant. And since then, they've moved on to improve primarily the error interface, sort of again to make additional technological improvements that to get the data rates required, and this evolves through the 802.16.2009 profile, which is release 1.5, that adds frequency division duplexing on top of time division, or that defines frequency division duplexing for the 802.16e standard. And finally, up to 802.16m, the Wireless MAN advanced standard. And this has been certified as IMTS advanced compliant. So what we're going to do now is have a look at some of the features of 802.16e. And I've provided a reference for that at the end of the notes, and then have a look at what additional features are available in 802.16m. Just sort of note those. So 802.16e is a point-to-point connection standard. So mainly what it offers is a physical layer, PHY layer, and a MAC layer. And we'll see later that sort of beyond that standard, there's a group that works on a networking layer to sit on top of that. Now, it defines a number of options, particularly for the PHY, and therefore interoperability is not guaranteed. So unlike, for instance, the LTE standard, where if you adhere to that, everybody can interoperate, here, you could adhere to the 802.16e standard and not interoperate. We'll get back to that, but so in order to deal with this, the standard further defines profiles, system profiles, and certification profiles. And so if you adhere to a specific system and certification profile, then you will be guaranteed to interoperate. So vendors would have to check that their profiles match, not just say that they're compliant with the standard overall. So a system profile defines a mandatory and optional, the mandatory and optional PHY and MAC layer features. And so obviously that would be specific to one of the standards. And then the certification profile further defines the operating frequency, channel bandwidth, and duplexing mode. And again, equipment can then be certified against that certification profile, and if two pieces of equipment have the same certification profile or which are certified against, then they should interoperate. Okay, and returning to the slide I skipped over, this summarizes again the evolution of the standard in terms of sort of the important features. Okay, so as I said before, the standard specifies the PHY and MAC layer, and on top of that, there is an additional working group which deals with defining a network access layer. So dealing with the interface between the core network and the access point, and facilitating mobility and facilitating interoperability with different networks. So what we're going to concentrate on is the PHY and MAC layers. And so we'll look at the sort of basic technology used at the PHY layer, and then we'll deal with the MAC layer, which is divided into three sublayers. The convergence sublayer provides an interface to different network types, so essentially just packages the data in a way that other networks would find acceptable. The security sublayer again provides encryption and authentication. And then the MAC common part sublayer is going to provide the medium access control, including the quality of service provision. So it's going to determine how the resources are allocated and also deal with errors. So the PHY layer is OFDM based and has good peak data rates. A typical peak data rate would be 25 megabits per second, so quite good. It has scalable bandwidth and data rate support. So this means that depending on the quality of your channel, you can either get more bandwidth to maintain your bitrate or decrease the bitrate within the same bandwidth in order to maintain quality. It has adaptive modulation and coding. So again, depending on the quality of the channel, you might use different modulation schemes and different coding schemes to try and maintain the quality of the signal. Error correction or error handling is provided in the form of a hybrid ARQ, which combines forward error correction and ARQ techniques, so retransmission of the data if it does not arrive correctly. Both time division and frequency division duplexing are supported, and so the uplink and downlink channels, you can either define uplink and downlink by different time slots or by different frequency subchannels. OFDMA is used, so again, resources are allocated according to the OFDM channels, and we'll see also according to time slots. And advanced antenna techniques are supported, so MIMO techniques and beamforming. So quality of service is fairly detailed, the specifications are fairly detailed and cater for a wide variety of classes. I think it's a bit more complicated than what's proposed in LTE, but perhaps a bit more flexible as well. And we'll go through the various cases. Reasonably good security is provided, and support for mobility is provided. So you can have a secure, seamless handover. You can have their power saving mechanisms. At the PHY layer, since you want to pick channels, you have channel estimation, power control, all the things that we would have seen before. And 802.16, well, WiMAX in general comes from the packet data world and has an IP-based architecture. So, again, the PHY layer uses OFDM, which is supported by fast Fourier transforms. And again, exactly what you can pick depends on what flavor of the standard, but what we'll see in 802.16e is that you can vary the size of your fast Fourier transform. Okay, so one option is to have a fixed OFDM PHY. So here your fast Fourier transform would be of size 256. So you'd have 192 subcarriers, 8 control channels doing things like channel estimation and synchronization. Okay, apologies, I seem to have... Okay, apologies, I hit a bad button there, so we're on track again now. Okay, so we have 192 data carriers, 8 pilot subcarriers for channel estimation and synchronization, and additional control channels. Now, the fixed FFT size means that the subcarrier spacing varies with channel bandwidth. The higher the bandwidth, the less the symbol time, and the larger fraction of time needed to overcome a delay spread. So, to counteract that, there's a mobile WiMAX off DMA PHY, which allows for variable size fast Fourier transforms. And so that's the scalable off DMA. And so here the subcarrier spacing is maintained. And so when the bandwidth increases, you use a larger fast Fourier transform, so you have more channels. Okay, and so this supports a delay spread of 20 milliseconds and vehicular speeds of 125 kilometers per hour. So it gives you reasonably good resistance to multipath effects having to do with delay. The form of OFDMA, that's curious, used for WiMAX allows the subcarriers, so the OFDM splits the spectrum into subchannels, and we can divide our resources both according to our frequency allocations, or our tone allocations, and also time slots. And so, again, you have your one or more subcarriers, and so that would give you one way to split the channel, but you also use time division multiple access to split the channel along the time axis as well. So, the slots are allocated in terms of the subchannel and a number of time slots. And the users are assigned a region, which is either a contiguous series of slots, or potentially uses distributed subcarriers to enhance frequency diversity. The allocation of the slots, again, is done according to quality of service requirements, which we'll be getting to shortly, and also according to channel conditions. So again, the overall allocation of the frequency channels is dependent on the channel conditions, and potentially you'll be given more channels to deal with any sort of problems within the channel conditions. Additionally, when we use time division duplexing, the time slots are divided into uplink and downlink subframes. And typically, you either have a higher downlink to uplink ratio, like 3:1, or 1:1, depends on what your traffic profiles are. So here we see the mapping. So we have our resources are divided into a downlink subframe and uplink subframe, and within the uplink and downlink subframe, the traffic is the resources are allocated to different connections. The information as to who has what resources at what time is contained in the uplink map and the downlink map. And so that allows the indication of who should be transmitting at any given time for the mobile user, and also for the mobile user to know where to look for their specific data. The ranging allows for the mobile users to synchronize, again, in order to know exactly when they should be transmitting. So they'll receive the uplink map and the downlink map. They'll know when they should be, when and where they will be receiving their downlink. Then they will also know, the ranging will allow them to synchronize, and then they will know when and where to send their uplink information. Okay, as we saw with LTE, a number of modulation schemes are allowed depending on the conditions of the channel, so what can be supported according to the conditions, and these again will allow you 1, 2, 4, or 6 bits to be sent per symbol. And these can change on a burst-by-burst basis, where again, a burst is one grouping of uplinks and uplink and downlink symbols, or sort of transmissions. Okay, channel quality indicators are used to inform the base station about the quality in the downlink direction. The base station estimates the quality in the uplink direction and chooses, then the base station is responsible for choosing the modulation and coding to be used to maximize the throughput for the available signal-to-noise ratio. And so you end up with a total of 52 combinations of modulation and coding schemes defined in burst profiles, so defined as valid burst transmission schemes. Okay, and so again, this table gives you a summary of the options, and what you see sort of in the example is that sort of the better the quality of your channel, as sort of represented by the closeness to the base station, the more ambitious you are in terms of the modulation and coding schemes, and hence the higher bit rates that can be achieved. So, the error handling is implemented at the PHY layer for 802.16, and it comes in the form of what's called a hybrid ARQ, and The hybrid ARQ is going to combine forward error correction with retransmission of data that's in error. And so there are two types, type 1, and in type 1 hybrid ARQ, the block of data is encoded using a cyclic redundancy code, which enables forward error correction. And so if the error correction, if the block is too damaged for error correction, then it's retransmitted. And the retransmitted block is then combined with the previous block. And the two blocks together are forward error correction is applied to the two blocks together to try and increase the chance of correct decoding. So the ARQ is in the form of stop and wait, but for efficiency purposes, WiMAX will share the channel amongst a number of users. So if one is waiting, then another one can use the channel. Now, in type 2 hybrid ARQ, the retransmissions are coded differently, usually with additional parity bits. So if it was sent incorrectly once, then you try and... on the assumption that maybe this is an issue with the channel, you add additional encoding to hopefully improve the chances of correctly decoding the block the second time round. So again, that's just sort of a list of features that have to do with the physical layer. And again, allow for a fairly high bitrate transmission of data, particularly, again, close to base stations. The MAC layer, then, is used to provide network access, medium access, so access to the connections, and, again, has the three sublayers, and also again provides an interface to different sorts of networks. Going sort of into the wider, into the beyond the wireless link. Okay, so if we have the convergence sublayer, which defines interfaces with various types of networks, ATM, TDM voice, telephony networks, Ethernet, IP, other protocols, and not all of these would necessarily be supported, although this is probably out, this statement's out of date. Well, I mean, it would hold for 802.16e, but more interfaces are provided now. The MAC security layer provides for encryption of data, device authentication by MAC address, protection of control methods, and support for fast reauthentication during handover. The channel access mechanism, so how resources are actually allocated, is complex and strongly tied to the idea of quality of service provisioning. The downlink allocation is based on the needs of the incoming traffic. And the uplink allocation is requested by the mobile station. if the mobile station has multiple connections to a base station, the base station will allocate the bandwidth as a block, which then the mobile station can use as it sees fit. The base station uses polling to solicit requests. And if the mobile station already has an allocation, it has to use that allocation to make any additional requests. So the base station can go around and ask each mobile station individually. It also has provisions whereby the mobile stations can contend for access, so that there's slots which are contention-based where the mobile stations can put in requests. And again, if there's already an allocation, the mobile station should use that to make additional requests. The allocation decisions are strongly tied to quality of service considerations then. So, again, a fairly detailed quality of service provisioning is defined, which allows for a number of different categories of provisions, which will, again, be tailored to different data types. So it's connection-oriented in the sense that the resources are requested of the base station and granted by the base station. So there's a centralized controller granting resources. The connections are unidirectional, so you have uplink and downlink connections, and also separate connections to send data and control information. The unidirectional flow of packets is defined as a service flow, and the quality of service parameters will be attached to these service flows in the form of a service flow ID and a connection ID. Each flow then will also have quality of service parameters attached. And so this is in terms of, and various information about those parameters. So you have the provisioned parameters, the admitted parameters, which are those for which resources are reserved, the active QoS parameter set, so which ones are being provided at any given time, and an authorization module, which will check the validity of the QoS parameters. And the parameters, again, there's a fairly long list of them. In terms of priority, rates, scheduling, ARQ, delay, jitter, etc. So, within those parameters, or using those parameters and then scheduling policies, five different allocation mappings can be defined. And these are unsolicited grant, real-time polling, non-real-time polling, best effort, and extended real-time variable rate service. And we'll go over these in greater detail. The table here just summarizes what the purpose of these different QoS allocation mappings is. So unsolicited grant service is essentially a periodic allocation of a fixed amount of resources, and so that supports fixed size data packets at a constant bit rate. And so that would be things like voice over IP without silence suppression, so without any sort of additional compression, where you are again generating data at a fixed rate, and it needs to be transmitted at that rate. And there's a number of service flow parameters that have to be defined. Critically, the traffic rate, also the latency, jitter, and whether you want to retransmit your data or not. Okay. And so, according to this, you will again be fit, you'll be allocated a periodic fixed amount of resource. And that's handy because you don't have there's no request overhead or latency. You don't have to keep asking for the resource. It's just given to you for as long as you need it. Real-time polling service supports data which is periodic but of variable size now. So things like streaming of video. So the frames might be of different size, but you need a sort of constant flow of them. And again, there's a number of service flow parameters that need to be defined. And the base station now asks the mobile station or provides a slot in which the mobile station can indicate what resources it needs, and then those resources will be allocated. So the mobile station is now able to indicate on a periodic basis sort of what it has to transmit, and that gets transmitted. Non-real-time polling services are designed to support delay-tolerant data streams, which sort of need a minimum guaranteed rate. So this is an example. This is file transfer. So you needed to get there eventually, so you want some minimum rate, but you don't mind whether it's getting there regularly or not. And so this is accomplished by, again, allocating polling opportunities for the mobile stations, but at a lesser frequency. There's also a provision that the mobile stations can also request access during the contention-based polling opportunities. So it has two opportunities to request resources. So best effort service offers no minimum guarantees. And in this case, the mobile station has to use contention-based polling to request the resources. And finally, we have extended real-time variable rate services. And these support variable data rate real-time applications that require a guarantee on data rate and delay, but also are not of fixed size. So voice over IP with silence suppression is an example. So the transmission should be periodic. It's not a fixed size, but you need some guarantee. Okay. And here, periodic allocation opportunities are provided. So there is a polling, or sorry, no, you have an automatic grant of a certain data rate, but the mobile station can also request additional resources, and again, the additional request is handled within the periodic grant. So 802.16e defines these service types, and it requires that the base station cater, or their scheduling and allocation policies to cater for these, but it does not specify exactly how these policies are catered for. So it's up to the manufacturer to determine how it's going to deal with these, but it has to deal with these different categories. So 802.16 also provides power saving in the form of a number of sleep modes, which allow the device to be unavailable for a predetermined period of time, which is negotiated with the base station. So we have PowerSave Class 1, where the sleep window increases exponentially from a minimum to a maximum value. PowerSave Class 2, the sleep window is fixed length. And PowerSave Class 3, the sleep window is a one-time only event. Even within this, the mobile station will still handle handoff related issues, so it still has to stay sort of awake enough to know when it needs to hand over. And there is also an idle mode in which the mobile station doesn't register with the base station, but is still capable of receiving downlink traffic. And so in this mode, the mobile station would still be open to paging, and if they were paged, then they would handle connecting to the network. WiMAX also provides mobility support, so they envisage 4 mobility scenarios. Nomadic, where the user is moving from one fixed point to another fixed point, in which case they'll just require the user to reconnect. Portable is nomadic with some effort at handover if possible. Simple mobility allows the user to move at speeds up to 60 kilometers per hour with less than a second interruption for handover, so not spectacular if you're, again, driving and talking on your mobile. And then full mobility, in which the users can move at higher speeds and have low latency, so that would, but potentially lost packets. The standard defines a signaling mechanism for tracking mobile stations. So you have to keep track of the coverage area and the paging area. So again, very similar to what you would have seen in the cellular telephony standards. 3 handoff mechanisms are supported. The first is a hard handoff mechanism, and this is mandatory to be implemented. And this gives you an abrupt transfer from one base station to another based on the decision gathered by the mobile station, and can be made by the base station the mobile station or another entity, and can result in undelivered packets from the first base station. So if packets are queuing, they're just lost. There are two other optional handover mechanisms for WiMAX, or for 802.16e. And for these, the mobile station maintains simultaneous connections to multiple base stations, so that allows for the provision for not losing data. In fast base station switching, the mobile station maintains a list of base stations involved called an active set. Connection is maintained with each of these base stations, but data is transferred only from the anchor base station. And so handover would occur by changing the anchor base station. In macro diversity handover, we can have data exchanged between a number of base stations known as a diversity set. So more than, again, you can be talking to more than one base station at the same time. And so again, these facilitate smoother handover, but we now have to synchronize communication between the multiple base stations, which again introduces issues with resource allocation. And as I mentioned earlier, I'm not going to say a lot about the network architecture, but a separate working group in the WiMAX forum deals with the networking aspect of WiMAX and is responsible for defining end-to-end network requirements and architectures, and is designed to support fixed, nomadic, and mobile deployments, and assumes an all-IP service. So the setup ends up fairly similar, at least at a high level, to that for other cellular architectures. You have your base stations, which provide the air interface. And then you have an access network, which provides a gateway between your wireless link and the core network. And then a fairly large interface to connect to various other external networks. So again, you have your mobile stations, your base stations, which connect to this access network, and a gateway then into an IP network, and potentially connectivity to other forms of networks. So that gives you sort of, again, a fairly high-level overview of WiMAX. Again, it comes from the data networking side of things, with sort of cellular concepts, mobility sort of tacked on second as a secondary source. And again, so it would technologically, it was quite sophisticated, but it's been playing catch up on the mobility side of the mobility aspects. But again, it is 802.16e is a certified 3G standard, and then 802.16m is a certified 4G standard. So we're not going to say a lot about the beyond 802.16e, but we will sort of mention a few of the highlights. So 802.16/2009 amended 802.16e, and finally all of that was consolidated into the 802.16m standardization, which makes improvements on the data rates provided by the air interface. Other standards have been proposed, like 802.16j, which defines multi-hop relays, so again paralleling the LTE advanced development. So just looking at selected key features of 802.16m, we have extended and improved MIMO modes, increased voice over IP capacity, so increased support for voice connectivity specifically, in terms of a new QoS class, the definition of multi-hop relay, support of femto-based stations, so very small range-based stations, multi-base station MIMO, so again, this idea of connecting to, trying to improve channel quality by connecting to a number of base stations over multiple antennas, improved handover and multi-radio coexistence, so sharing of radio channels. Okay, so this table just summarizes some of the features. The basic underlying technology is the same. Again, we see the improved MIMO technology. Control channels, which have been streamlined. Decreased latency on the ARQ, and an additional quality of service class, and also enhanced power conservation techniques. So, again, that's just a summary of the improvements. Again, they have led to the 802.16m standard being certified as 4G. So, finally, we just have a number of references which give you some details on the various aspects of OFDM, MIMO, LTE and LTE Advanced, and finally the WiMAX. This refers to the 802.16e standard. I won't hold you responsible for the 802.16m details, except at a very high level, as discussed in the lecture. So that concludes our discussion of 4G. Technologies and standards. We're going to sort of leave the cellular world next lecture and look at wireless LAN technology, again, which is the topic of your assignment. And hopefully I will also have the demonstrator will also be able to come for some portion of the lecture and sort of discuss issues around the assignment and the NS aspect of the assignment. So I will see you all next week.